The Worst Rebellion. Hi, this is Zdravko Stefanović from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. And today we are continuing with our discussion of selected passages from the book of Numbers. And to help me explore this challenging book, I have invited two of my colleagues to join me, Kyle Craig, professor of chemistry at Walla Walla University, and Paul Dibdal, professor of religion here at Walla Walla University. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you remember it, last week we talked a little about the Midianites and Hobab, who helped guide the Israelites through the wilderness. And this time we'll be talking about the family of Moses. And Moses married one of Jethro's or Reuel's daughters. The man had two names, at least two that we know of, Jethro and Reuel. And Moses married his eldest daughter when Moses lived in Midian. So Numbers 12 is a well-known passage. I will ask Paul to read the first three verses, please.
Okay. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses? They asked. Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. Now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth.
All right. So
he didn't write that, in other words.
let's start from the beginning, and we'll probably come to that point very soon. Cushite wife. Cushite people would be somewhere in northeastern Africa, the territory of, let's say, southern Egypt, Ethiopia, and the whole region. Ancient geographical terms were loosely applied to usually to wide territories and so on. So there is a question here. Who is this Cushite wife of Moses? Zipporah or somebody else?
I don't think there's full agreement, at least among scholars, whether it is Zipporah or a later wife that Moses takes perhaps after Zipporah has died.
And let's keep in mind that the text may say who Moses had married, and so on. So it is not very clear from the text. Let's assume that it is Zipporah, Jethro's oldest daughter. So what was the problem here? How is Moses' marriage related to the following question or accusation? Has the Lord spoken only through Moses and not through us also?
Yeah, it seems to kind of come out of the blue a little bit here. So we're left trying to figure out, how the family dynamics may play into it, because clearly it does play into it.
There's some jealousy of some sort going on here.
In Moses' family.
Yeah.
And that is why we entitled this discussion The Worst Rebellion, because this time there is disagreement and competition in Moses' family between the siblings. So the eldest daughter to Amram and Jochebed that was born, or the eldest child, I should say, is a daughter by the name of Miriam. And she's even called in the Bible a prophetess. So she must have exercised some type of influence on Moses and his leadership role. Aaron was the next one, 3 years older than Moses, and Moses was the youngest sibling, the baby in the family. And yet he was a great leader. Now, it so happens that as we read the Pentateuch, we find in several places where Moses interacted with Jethro, his father-in-law, and Jethro was full of wisdom, and Moses followed the advice of his father-in-law.
Yes, he did.
What fascinated me is once when I read the Pentateuch, I discovered that when Jethro came formally to meet Moses, the whole family, and of course his daughter Zipporah and the grandchildren, the text says, now this may be just, by chance, or there is an omission, only Aaron came to formally greet Jethro. And Miriam's name is not mentioned. Now, I hope I'm not reading too much into the narrative, but there is a possibility that a competition developed between Miriam, the eldest sibling, who would normally remind Moses, say, remember, you would have been eaten by the crocodiles had I not done this or that.
Who's there? Yeah,
and then Moses'
true.
Life was also saved in Midian. He was exhausted, he was without water, without shelter, and so on, and he was offered physical help, spiritual mentorship in monotheistic religion, and so on. So Jethro through Zipporah versus Miriam. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
That'd be a pretty intense rivalry, you can imagine.
So Miriam then, jealous, as it were, of the influence
by Jethro
of Jethro through his wife. Then very interesting.
That's one way in which we can make sense of the passage here and put the two together. Mm-hmm. Now we come to the verse that Kyle has reminded us of. Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. Two problems we can see with this verse. One is the authorship of Moses. Is it very humble to say, I'm the humblest person on earth?
No. That's an easy one to answer.
I have another question, and that is, as we read the Pentateuch, Moses was outstanding. We really do not want to question that, nor to undermine the authority that is given to us in the Pentateuch. But was he really outstandingly humble, controlling his temper very effectively?
You could go either way on that one. Sorry to cut in, but you sometimes you wonder if, you know, if I was there, I'd have probably really told him what was going on a couple times for sure. But I don't know. It's maybe he was, you know, very good at controlling his temper, but there were other times when, yeah, he did kind of really get angry too as well. Mm-hmm. Like for my example, I'm sure there's lots of ways you can go with this, but I think with the golden calf incident, making them drink the gold water that he, you know, after, I mean, I'm sure there's symbolism and all that, but still, to me, that's just like, ouch, that's maybe going a little bit too far. I'm just, you know, thinking of that from a purely, you know, biochemistry point of view, that's going to be hard on someone's system to ingest that much metal.
He's a man of feeling, I think, Moses is. Mm-hmm. And we see from the beginning, he murders an Egyptian. You know, he is a passionate man, to use a more common word, a man of passion. Mm-hmm. And often it's directed for the good. Sometimes it isn't.
As we'll see a little later on in a few weeks as we study some of the passages from the Book of Numbers. Well, scholars usually explain this passage in two different ways. One is that Moses' humility here is contrasted with Aaron and Miriam and their pride here, not willing to submit themselves to Moses' role of leadership. Another approach is some scholars have focused on the term humble. And what's most helpful here is that the term is frequently used in the Old Testament. It's a common word, ana, we say in Hebrew, that's found basically, if I'm not mistaken, hundreds of times in the Old Testament, especially in the book of Psalms, where the psalmist prays to God, asks for help, and says, I'm afflicted, I'm poor, I'm wretched, I'm helpless. I feel miserable. Come to my aid. Come to my help. My enemies are too strong for me. So the question is, would it be possible to read this, that even Moses could have written it this way? Moses was a suffering man, miserable man, more suffering than anybody else on the face of the earth. And I would like to see the human being who, at least at one point in his or her time in life, did not feel this way. Nobody knows the trouble I have seen.
Oh.
I'm the picked on, sort of the one that's been picked on. Yeah.
And Moses had, I mean, he was right to feel that way, because not only that rebellions are coming outside of the family, but now from the midst of his own family.
So to kind of put it in colloquial terms, you're saying that he was having sort of the ultimate pity party and feeling sorry for himself here. Could be one way of taking this translation.
And wouldn't that be nice, because the New Testament tells us of the suffering servant, Jesus Christ, who was prefigured, you know, in the role of Moses. Did I say it right? Or Moses basically becomes a type of the suffering servant Jesus Christ in the New Testament. That's probably a more correct way to put it. Numbers 14 talks about another famous rebellion, or infamous, shall we say.
Yeah.
And that is when the spies, let's remember that they were the leaders of the tribes. They were not ordinary people, but the leaders. They went to explore the promised land, and they came back, and they did not, except for two of them, they did not give a good report, and they proved to be very skeptical about the trust in God that he could bring them into the promised land. Moses, on the other hand, he pleads before God in their behalf. So here is my question. Since the people were planning to stone Moses and Aaron, according to the text, why is Moses defending them before God?
Isn't this a place where we see something about the goodness of Moses maybe shining through here?
Loving his enemies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Also, I think maybe Moses wanted or knew or understood, I guess is the word I'm looking for, what God's plan was. And he's kind of saying, look, God, you got this plan here, and I know these people are, you know, getting in the way and trying to mess up the plan that you have for them, but you really want to show your glory in the earth, and yeah, these people maybe aren't the best way to do it, but they're what you've got right now.
Mm-hmm. And Moses may be going too far in doing it. He says, people around us will say the Lord was not capable of bringing his people into the promised land. What kind of God is he? Is Moses here twisting God's arm?
We could call it manipulation. We could say also that he is concerned for God's reputation. That's maybe a more positive way of saying it.
Now, in shame culture, that was very important. Very strong argument.
That you not lose face. And there's a sense, too, in which Moses, as their leader, would also lose face.
Mm-hmm.
So it would reflect on his leadership. Maybe I'm making too much of it here, but he does distance himself from the people in his conversation with God here. These people, he slaughtered them in the desert. Forgive the sin of these people. So I don't know. It's a sign of that we see good things about Moses here, but maybe. You know, he's in it as well, maybe watching out for himself.
He doesn't
want
to look like
he
signed on to the wrong team.
Mm-hmm. But interceding for his people, in a sense, he's on both sides. That's the only way he can mediate for them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it comes back to the idea of Moses and Jesus sharing similar attributes.
Why is it that God does not look straight into his eyes and say, don't talk to me that way? Most likely, I believe that God didn't do it because Moses was not doing it for his selfish interests. He was doing it in behalf of God's people so that sinners can be saved.
Yeah.
And that would be the reason why God forgave him. I would like to conclude our discussion today by saying that divine discipline has a redemptive purpose in the Bible. Thank you, gentlemen, Paul Devdahl and Kyle Craig. And thank you, Suzanne Michael, our radio technician, for a good discussion today. I would like to invite our listeners to join us next time as we study the book of Numbers. Thank you all for tuning in. For Good Word, I'm Slavko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.